no secret that rural towns in Kansas are losing population. Even Greensburg, where more than $75 million and a national spotlight helped the town rebuild after a tornado struck in 2007. Still, the population is half what it was before.
We haven't built any new houses for about a year. What we need are some more jobs, actually, to bring people to town.
I'm Gina Kaufman. Coming up on Central Standard, we look at why people are leaving rural Kansas and at efforts to bring them back. Join the conversation after this news. It's getting lonely out there on the plains. New census reports show that more people are moving out of Kansas than are moving into the state. At least that's been the case for the last few years. In fact, according to census reports, Kansas lost more than 10,000 people between 2010 and 2013. That's a net loss. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. Here to help us tell the story behind the numbers is Dorothy Ginther, a professor of economics at KU, where she is also director of the Center for Economic and Business Analysis. She joins us today from the studios of Kansas Public Radio. Hi, Dorothy. How are you this morning?
This is Donna Ginther.
Oh, excuse me. Donna Ginther. So sorry about that. So the numbers don't sound too encouraging, but of course, Kansas is a big state and the population isn't changing evenly throughout that huge expanse. So maybe you could provide a more nuanced picture of how the population is distributed in Kansas to begin with.
What we see in Kansas is that the population is growing in the metropolitan regions of Johnson County, outside of Kansas City, Topeka, and Riley County, and Sedgwick County, where Wichita is. And the population is diminishing considerably in north-central, northwest, and to a lesser extent, southwest Kansas.
What do you think accounts for the population loss in Kansas that the Census Bureau has just reported? Do you think that there's anything new in the last couple of years, or do you think that that's just a continuation of a previous story?
I think it's a continuation of previous trends. Essentially, you have a lot of agriculture and energy production out in western Kansas. And agriculture has become increasingly more efficient. You just don't need as many people to produce agriculture. You need lots of big farm equipment. I was reading in the New York Times last week that they now have robots in dairies, you know, one of the growth industries out in western Kansas. They're putting dairies up. And they now have robots that milk the cows, so you don't need people to milk the cows.
But it can't just be robots depleting Kansas population.
It's not. It's not. But agriculture does not require a lot of people anymore. It used to require a lot of manual labor. And population trends, you know, the population follows the jobs. And you know, we have a lot of production out in western Kansas, but it takes fewer and fewer people to produce agriculture and energy out there.
How does it affect the state's overall functioning and budget for the population to be decreasing like this?
It's a burden on the fiscal situation in the state because, you know, you do still have people out there. And to maintain school districts and to maintain the local governments is expensive, especially when there are fewer and fewer people out there.
Also joining us today in the studio is KCUR's own Frank Morris. His extensive reporting has taken him throughout the state, and he's also a rural Kansas native who now resides in, dare I say it, Missouri, just on the other side of the state line. Good morning, Frank.
Morning, Gina.
I want to get to your reporting in a second, but would you mind telling us a little bit of your own story? What's the name of the town where you grew up?
Nickerson, Kansas.
What kind of change have you seen in that town in your lifetime?
It's declined. I mean, the half of the downtown fell down because the bricks that they made it out of were bad, and the town itself hasn't declined as steeply as some of the other farming towns. This is a farming community, but it's also fairly close to Hutchinson. And so it's an alternative place to live if you work in Hutchinson. And Hutchinson has pretty much held steady. And Nickerson, I think, is holding right at about pretty close to 1,000 people, which is pretty close to what it was when I was a kid.
You've also traveled pretty extensively through your reporting, and just anecdotally in terms of being someone who's traveling around Kansas with some regularity, what are you seeing?
Oh, well, you know, you see a lot of beautiful old bank buildings and whole downtowns that are completely hollowed out. There's nothing going on now, and the town, you know, really doesn't have much reason to exist. And people who live in those towns tend to be increasingly really lower income. I mean, they're at the bottom of the income scale for the most part, not exclusively. And, you know, as Donna was saying, the scale of agriculture, the fact that you don't have all those mouths to feed, and you don't need a grocery store, a town, and, you know, all the a bank every 10 miles, which is the way it used to be set. It is set up, but a lot of times now, you know, maybe you just have a grain elevator left and a bunch of falling down buildings.
Well, you've recently reported on the town of Greensburg, Kansas, where a 2007 tornado completely decimated the town, but also created what was perceived as an opportunity to rebuild and attract new residents. How did you see that shaping up?
Well, I mean, you know, right from the get-go, the day after the tornado, which was 7 years ago Sunday, people were asking, and I was asking, hey, look, this town was declining. Because, you know, you just go on the web internet and see, oh, this town's, you know, declining population. You look at the census data, and people are saying, well, are you going to rebuild? Why are you going to rebuild? Is there any, you know, I mean, I know the people have an affinity for these towns, and that's what keeps these towns going as much as anything. It's just people just love, have memories. They're invested. They have generations there. And so they did. They did rebuild. They and it was very aggressive. They kind of hit right at the right time with the green, you know, environmentally conscious. I mean, there's a whole bunch of companies that wanted to come in and supply and really basically test their, you know, super environmentally efficient stuff. So they built what is an amazing part of a town, and all the public buildings are super high efficient. A bunch of architects came in and from Kansas City and built these beautiful buildings, but it just got stuck maybe 2-3 years ago, and for economic reasons they haven't filled out the town, so there's still big swatches, or, you know, big patches of barren land with some old foundations still on them. In the middle of a bunch of new houses, the town is kind of at it's stuck. There's a chicken and egg problem because the town can't attract businesses because of where it is, out in the middle of nowhere with no, you know, big population center for a market or for a job, for a labor pool. And it's not close to any transportation hubs, so there's no reason to put anything there. And then you can't get that. You can't. The jobs don't create themselves. And if the other problem is there's no place for people to live if they do have jobs. The houses are expensive because they're all new, and they're expensive to rent. So the Greensburg is kind of stuck in this, purgatory.
Right. Well, let's give Frank's story from Greensburg, Kansas, a listen.
7 years ago, just hours after the tornado shredded Greensburg and its schools, Superintendent Darren Hedrick stood in the rubble under black clouds, promising rebirth.
Towns are about people. They're not about buildings. And as long as the people are willing to stay, the way life stays.
Fast forward to today, and natural sunlight bathes Hedrick inside Greensburg's beautiful, high-tech public school.
I do think this building is doing what it's supposed to. It does allow us to attract people, new kids, new families. It allows us to attract staff.
It uses about one quarter the energy a typical school does, part of a very ambitious green rebuilding program here led by people like Ruth Ann Weddle.
We said, build it and they will come. We saw it as an opportunity to recreate ourselves. So it was exciting to dream big.
And it made a terrific story. Even a reality show.
Wind turbine.
Daylight and natural ventilation.
Solar panels.
Green is the smartest decision we've ever made.
Greensburg returns with back-to-back all-new episodes.
After the tornado, architects and volunteer workers swept in, fueled by at least $75 million from taxpayers and insurance companies. Now, Greensburg is a patchwork of houses placed around bleak, vacant lots and more than a dozen very modern, super-efficient buildings. Daniel Wallach, founder of Greensburg Greentown, says it's the highest concentration of them in the country.
Quite remarkable. But frankly, since that first year, not much has happened.
The tornado money is long gone, and the population is stuck at about 800, right where it was just after the disaster.
The town is struggling. There's a lot of fear and concern in town that may not be sustainable as a community. Ghost town. And some people in the community are blaming the Green Initiative itself, which is crazy.
At the Bar H Tavern, a low-slung red building spared by the tornado, a few customers groused loudly about the town's green focus. Nobody would agree to be interviewed, but I did get an earful. These men claim they were cut out of the process, didn't see a dime of the millions spent. They say the whole thing was crazy expensive and silly. Some rich outsider's utopian vision, nothing to do with a hardworking Kansas farm town. Though you can get a good cup of coffee.
What can I get for you this morning?
Tim Kyle runs the Green Bean Coffee Shop with his wife.
Well, obviously there would have been mistakes made. There's no blueprint, there's no book to follow, there's no checklist to go on. Your entire town got completely wiped off the face of the map.
But Kyle backs the Green Initiative. Take it away, he says, and there's nothing to distinguish Greensburg from hundreds of other little towns withering on the high plains. Tom Korns, a third-generation Greensburg banker, agrees, but says being green isn't enough.
We haven't built any new houses for about a year. What we need are some more jobs, actually, to bring people to town.
People like Fred Weir.
I wanted to build an industry, a Ma-Paw industry.
Weir bolted back to Greensburg, his hometown, 3 months after the tornado. He coordinated hundreds of volunteers building new houses for tornado victims. He built one for his own family, too, and a shop for his budding construction business. But that $40 an hour work has since dried up here.
So I took a $12 an hour job, or less, from the county, maintaining the buildings. I'm happy as can be, but I'm not able to pay for my house.
Or sell it, yet. Here on the edge of town, a big modern sign proclaims Greensburg Industrial Park.
To let folks know it's here. Otherwise, they drive by and say, what a large field.
Greensburg City Manager Ed Truelove hopes to lure a little oil drilling company or an ag-related factory. But he says businesses well-suited to this remote area fear red tape in Greensburg.
We'll have companies that choose not to even call Greensburg because we're green. So we need to just concentrate on the economy itself rather than just being green and sustainable.
Because towns out here face brutal, sustained economic headwinds. The region used to be full of big families running small farms. All those country folks shopped in closely spaced little towns. Now the farms out here are enormous. The families are small, and towns like Greensburg grope for a reason to exist.
And in that regard, we're no different than any other small town in Kansas who has faced the same declining populations, the children graduating high school, going off to college, and not coming back.
Personally, I think it's a cop-out.
Daniel Wallach is frustrated with Greensburg. He's close to folding Greensburg Greentown for lack of progress or funding. Superintendent Hedrick is calling for perseverance.
When the tornado happened, we were around 100 years old. We're 7 years old right now, just about. What do we need? We need time. You grow communities, a family at a time. You grow them a job at a time.
Greensburg will soon celebrate the grand opening of a new movie theater. That's a big deal in a town of 800. And when the party's over, Greensburg will face the same harsh challenge it has for years, trying to scratch out an existence, green or otherwise, on the high plains of Kansas. Frank Morris, KCUR News.
So, Frank, this Greensburg story is kind of a bummer, but the story there is very particular. What about this story is specific to Greensburg, and what aspects of the town's situation mirror larger trends?
Well, I mean, I think if you talk to anybody in Greensburg, virtually anybody, they'll say all these towns are dying. All these towns are looking for some way to get a foothold. You know, the thing about Greensburg was there's this massive reboot in 2007, and fueled by a lot of money and a lot of goodwill and a lot of do-gooders. You know, for some of them from Kansas City, prominent architects from Kansas City and Lawrence. In a way, Greensburg is completely different than all those other towns because it's got new everything. All the infrastructure's new. These buildings are great, pretty much great. Some of the technology doesn't really work, and that's a problem because some of the businesses went out of business and they can't get parts. So, I mean, there are issues. There are issues with the green stuff. But in at the end of the day, and that's kind of where Greensburg is now. It's like all the tornado thing is over. And now they have to figure out, okay, gosh, you know, here we are. It didn't quite catch fire the way we wanted it to. Daniel Wallach says because it didn't really have the backing that the city leadership changed over about a year and a half, 2 years after the tornado. And people came in who weren't really behind the Green Building Initiative, not the people who launched it in the first place.
Donna Ginther, as you listen to all of this, what's your sense of how Greensburg is and also isn't like other Kansas towns?
Well, I agree with Frank. It's, you know, it's new. It had a huge, sort of negative shock to the economy when it was basically leveled by the tornado. A lot of money came in. A lot of infrastructure was built. But once it was built, there weren't jobs in the economy in that area to sustain the population. And without jobs, you're not going to have population growth. I mean, the same thing happened in New Orleans with Hurricane Katrina, right? You know, you wipe out most of the city, a lot of people left and they didn't come back. So Greensburg is different in that they rebuilt. But at the same time, they're very similar to the rest of those small towns in western Kansas where they don't have the economy does not support job growth, which doesn't support population growth.
Donna Ginther, what has been done policy-wise to counteract this trend and to get people back, so to speak?
Well, since 2011, Kansas has had rural opportunity zones. It takes two forms. The first is a student loan and a income tax waiver for up to 5 years for qualified individuals. And that has had a bit of success. There have been about 1,200 applications. About 350 people have come from out of state. And it's resulted in young people moving to 73 rural counties in western Kansas.
Donna, I want to get back to the other things that have happened here, but we actually have on the line with us a recipient of the student debt repayment program that's part of that rural opportunity zone situation. And this is a program that encourages people to relocate in Kansas by helping to relieve them of student debt. So if you don't mind, I'd like to go ahead and welcome him to the line, okay?
Sure.
Let's welcome Kyle Bowers to the conversation. Hi, Kyle.
Howdy. How are you guys today?
Good. How about you?
Not too bad. Beautiful day.
When did you move to Kansas?
We moved to Kansas January 1st of this year.
And who's we?
My wife and I and our nine-month-old.
So where exactly in Kansas are you?
We're in Belleville, Kansas, which is north central Kansas. We're in Republic County, and we are 10 miles south of the Nebraska line.
What made this location attractive to you other than the very understandably appealing notion of getting your student debt paid off?
I think rural America in general has a beauty about it that not a lot of people understand or appreciate. The hospital here is very rural health clinic, which means we see everything, which is appealing to me.
You work there at the health clinic?
Yep. I work at the hospital here. I'm a physical therapist here. So, I mean, I've seen just today, I've done some wound care stuff. I've seen an older gentleman worked on balance and strengthening, and then I've done some orthopedics already this morning, and that doesn't happen at every clinic.
Where did you move to Kansas from?
We moved from Maryville, Missouri, which was north of Kansas City there, about an hour and a half, and it was a town of about 12,000, and then the college was there, and that added another 8,000 students or so.
How did you hear about this program?
Originally, I would say it was from the hospital administrator here, but I heard more of it through our department manager. He was trying to list some of the benefits of the area. I believe he was the first one to tell me that.
So people who are hiring are actively mentioning this in recruitment?
Yes.
How have you been adjusting to life there? Do you think that you'll stay long term?
We hope to. We're struggling to find a house right now with a 9-month-old that has enough space. But yeah, our long-term goal is to eventually build a house out in the country and retire here. So, I mean, it's a beautiful area of the country.
Well, Kyle, I hope that we can check back in with you as you've been in Kansas a little bit longer. But good luck to you. You sound very optimistic, and we're glad to hear that.
I appreciate it and look forward to hearing from you guys again in a couple of years.
Thanks a lot. So that was Kyle Bowers, who's part of the Rural Opportunity Zone Student Debt Repayment Program. Donna Ginther, what can you tell us? What are you hearing in his story? Is that typical?
I think it's a win-win, right? The costs of college have gone up over time, and a lot of students are graduating with debt. And if they can get some of that debt forgiven by relocating to rural Kansas, if they have a job there, and it sounds like Kyle had a job at the local hospital. I mean, it's a great opportunity.
How big of a difference is that making in terms of population numbers?
Well, as I said, they've had about 1,200 applications, and about almost 700 have been approved. So 700, you know, if they're all like Kyle and have families, that, you know, means maybe 1,400 people or more have relocated to Kansas. That's not enough to offset the 10,000 that we've lost.
It's also significant, though, that these are college graduates, and, you know, because there has been, you know, a lot of people complain about this brain drain. You know, a lot of people, when they go to college, they just don't, as Ed Truelove, city manager of Greensburg, said, I mean, it's true, people tend not to come back because there just isn't the same kinds of opportunities that they can have, you know, in any, you know, halfway large metropolitan area.
Donna, when you listen to Frank's story, he mentioned the chicken and egg effect where, you know, you need the population to create the things that would to have a labor pool for businesses, and you need the businesses to attract the people. Do you see a way out of that cycle?
There are a couple of potential opportunities for Western Kansas. First of all would be alternative energy. You know, if you think about wind power, that's located out in areas where there aren't a lot of people. And in communities where you've seen wind power development, you've seen jobs and job growth and probably population growth that follows. Another sort of opportunity that is sort of more longer term is based on some research being done at the University of Kansas at the Center for Environmentally Beneficial Catalysis. This program uses biomass to create chemicals instead of petroleum. And so it needs to be located near the feedstock where you would produce lots of biomass, which would be out in the agricultural areas. Now, this is research, and it's just starting to be commercialized, but it may be an opportunity 10, 20 years down the road for population growth out in agricultural areas.
Donna, when you say biomass, is there a more standard layman's term for that?
Straw. So straw from wheat, you know, corn stalks, you know, when you harvest, you know, grain or corn, there's a lot of the plant that's left over. It's usually plowed under but it could also be harvested and used for alternative fuels, or in the case of the CEBC work, alternative chemical production.
And what about immigration? I've heard it mentioned that immigration could be a possible solution to our population issue, but I wonder if already, you know, the census would only track documented population growth.
The census tracks, the census does not ask your visa status. So population growth, immigration is a solution for Kansas. And if you think of it, it's a solution that we should embrace out in certain counties in western Kansas where there's a meatpacking industry. You've seen a huge amount of immigration out in Ulysses, Garden City, people to work in the meatpacking plants. And those communities are growing because they have jobs and they have immigrants.
The communities are growing. Can you tell me whether they're thriving?
I haven't been out there, but they seem to be. You know, we do a conference each year with people in Ulysses, and it seems to be a growing community.
Yeah, and you know, I would just put in that, again, and Dodge is another one that's got some meat packing and garden. You know, those towns are thriving, I think, compared to a lot of the towns around them. And you know, it's also true that if you're a very small town, it's got a hospital. That's a good draw. If you're kind of a retail center for the region, like Hutchinson, that's great. Or if you've got a little junior college or something like that, that really helps. So oil industry, that sort of stuff helps. Things like an ethanol plant, though, that just doesn't do that much for. I mean, that's a few jobs.
You know, earlier in the show, we were talking about changes in agriculture, and I wonder if changes in agriculture and changes in the land itself due to climate and other factors, you know, are those things going to turn around, or do we have to come up with industry that isn't agriculture-centric?
You got to come up with industry out there that isn't water-centric, because they're running out of water. The Ogallala Aquifer is going dry in some places. It's getting it's getting uneconomical to pump the water out. You can't pump it out fast enough to run an irrigation well in a lot of places now where they used to be very plentiful. So that's a big problem out there.
We're going to take a short break, but when we return, we'll continue this conversation, checking in with someone from a rural Kansas county that is actually seeing some growth. A growth of 0.08%. We'll hear from her and from you right after the break. You're listening to Central Standard.
Hear that lonesome whippoorwill. He sounds too blue to fly. The midnight train is whining. I'm so lonesome I could cry.
Good morning and welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. That's Hank Williams. And today we're talking about population loss in Kansas. A lot of that is happening in rural Kansas. Are you from rural Kansas? Do you live there now? What are you seeing? Share your stories and observations at 816-235-2888. That number again is 816-235-2888. We'll get back shortly to our conversation with KU Professor of Economics Donna Ginther and KCUR's national correspondent Frank Morris in just a second. But now we're joined on the line by Heather Hartman, who's calling into our studios from Beloit, Kansas. She's the Economic Development Director for Mitchell County. And Heather, your county is seeing some growth. Is that correct?
That is correct. We are very proud of our growth. We have a 0.08% growth. And we talk about that often and loudly because, as you know, there are not many people that can say they have any sort of growth. So we're happy with what we have.
Well, 0.08% in your particular county, how many people is that?
About five.
Do you know them?
It's a positive trend.
Do you know them?
Do I know them? Sure, I do know them. I probably actually do. We've done a lot to try and recruit back to our area. You talked earlier about the ROS program. That's something that we use to recruit. We're happy that it has some national media attention, but we also try and use it with our employers. So when an employer is trying to get someone to move back or move into rural Kansas, we hope that they can maybe use that. And I know sometimes that's not the most dramatic thing for them, but that $3,000 per year could be the deciding factor between one job or another.
But I want to get back to these five people. Do you know what brought these people who account for your current 0.08% growth to Mitchell County?
I hope so. I mean, I hope that we're providing a well-rounded community. We have a fantastic health system here. We're fortunate enough to have two school systems. We have both a K-12 Catholic school and a K-12 3A public school. We're very proud of both of them. They've had some tremendous success in the last few years, which helps. We try to have a downtown that has some activity. I hope that we're not some of the other communities that you're talking about. We want to be attractive when you come to town. We want to be friendly, and we want to have some cooperation.
I want to jump in real quick and ask Donna Ginther to weigh in here, because you've mentioned a couple of things we haven't touched on in any great detail: schools and downtowns. Are these things that we need to be addressing, Donna?
Yes. I mean, there's a concern that if you close the school, you'll kill the community. Yet it's very expensive, you know, from a taxpayer's point of view, to maintain several small rural school districts. So, you know, having students and having a school in your community is definitely good for growth, because schools provide jobs. What was the follow-up question?
Oh, downtowns.
Downtowns. Well, yes, people want to live where they have amenities, where they have, ability to shop, places to go. So those amenities attract people as well.
Through these rural opportunity zones, are people moving to towns with the idea of starting up businesses there in previously, maybe kind of abandoned spots?
Yes.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, that happens for us too. If we have buildings that we can repurpose, that's something that's looked into in great detail, because construction's expensive. So if we can repurpose something that we have, that helps out our community also.
Yeah, I would just jump in too that, you know, a 0.08% growth rate, five new people, doesn't really tell the whole story, because these communities have a lot of elderly people and they die. And so they're you're really, like in the case of Greensburg, a lot of the old folks that came back right after the tornado are now gone. And so the fact that their number is pretty stagnant doesn't mean that they haven't brought in a lot of people. A lot of people have come in. They've infilled from, you know, some of the population that's passed on.
Yeah, that's a good question. Heather, do you know what the average age in Mitchell County is?
I don't know what the average age. I can tell you I thought it was about 49, but I don't know that off the top of my head, no.
Donna Ginther, what is your sense of how aging populations affect this equation?
Oh, aging is a huge factor. If you look at the parts of Kansas that are losing the highest amount of population, those are also the counties that have the greatest number of people 65 and older relative to people 18 through 64. Those counties, you know, maybe have 50 elderly people per 100 people who are age 18 or 64 in some cases. So aging is a huge part of the equation, and if you don't have new people or young people in those counties, it's a significant negative trend in population growth.
And yet young people do feel some sort of nostalgia, whether it's by a direct connection with these areas or by just an idea in their minds about a pastoral time in America's past. Is that something that can be capitalized on, or is that just nostalgia is what nostalgia does? And
it all comes down to jobs, really, yeah. When you think about it. If there are employment opportunities, prime-aged people will locate there. And if there aren't, they won't.
It's pretty hard to live in rural Kansas unless you're working. That's part of the reason the unemployment rate is so low there. So the idea that, you know, you're going to move to someplace like Greensburg because you like that sense of a small town and you like the green initiative and everything, that really makes it a nice place to visit, but you can't live there unless you have a job.
Heather Hartman, what is your sense of what's going on in your county right now, and what do you see in your future? I mean, how are you going to capitalize on admittedly small growth, but you're right that it's against a trend, and is there a way for you to capitalize on that, or are you just going to cross your fingers and hope it continues?
Oh, no, we're going to try and capitalize on it. We try and recruit young professionals. We want those young families to move back into the area. We try and do that by workforce, and you're right, we have a very low unemployment rate here, but we're also bucking the trend on that a little bit because we do have some growth in our manufacturing and we have some growth in our small business. And for us, it isn't always, especially in my job, about recruiting some big new company with 500 jobs. It's more about letting the people that we have expand. So I get more joy out of seeing a small business expand and add a couple employees. That's great for me. That means that we have possibility of new families moving back into town, which helps our school system and helps our hospital. Housing is an issue like it is in all of rural Kansas. So we have the jobs, we don't have the houses, and that is something that we're aggressively working at.
When you say aggressively working at, how?
We've applied for several grants, and we have some development going on. We were fortunate enough to receive the Community Development Block Grant for Small Cities for Housing Rehab. We just were awarded that. Actually, I picked up the contract yesterday. So that will include rehabilitation for about 15 homes and then demolition of dilapidated homes. We'll do about 8 of those, which, again, it's a small step, but if I can get even half of those homes that aren't on the market now back on the market, it will help. And then we're fortunate enough to have some quite a bit of new development. We have some nice, beautiful homes going in, new development north side of town, and then that will help us do some trickle-down effect and also open up some new family homes. We realize housing is an issue, and if we recruit someone for our manufacturing or a teacher or a hospital administrator and we want to bring them through town, we need to make sure they can find a place to live also.
Well, thanks so much for talking with us, Heather Hartman from Mitchell County.
Well, thank you very much.
So, Donna Ginther, towns like this, we haven't talked much about places that might be seeing some growth, and that was admittedly small growth, but are there areas in Kansas that are seeing growth?
Oh, yes. As I mentioned earlier, there are parts of western Kansas that are seeing growth, largely due to the meatpacking industry. And the oil and gas industry, you know. So you see southwestern Kansas has growth, but it's the northwest and north central Kansas that are experiencing, you know, large population declines and a rapid aging of the population there. So we see that, you know, the metropolitan areas are growing. So around Kansas City, Topeka, Lawrence, near Fort Riley, Wichita area, and then counties out that have, you know, meatpacking and oil and gas.
Let's hear. We have a caller at 816-235-2888. I want to hear from Michelle in rural western Kansas. Hello, Michelle.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Sure. I'm at my daughter's gymnastics class. I apologize for the noise.
Well, we're glad she's got a gymnastics class to go to.
I want to say that, you know, I've listened to a lot of what everyone's talking about, and I'm really proud of Hamilton County. We're about 2 hours west of Dodge City. We have a huge opportunity for so many young families. The dairies have brought in a lot of growth to our community. Our schools are populated. We have a hospital. We have a Christian academy and a public school educational system. We have the rural opportunity zones, but we have a bowling alley, a movie theater, a 9-hole golf course that rivals many. We just have so much going on. And the other thing I wanted to say is that I hear a lot about industries needing to come in and businesses, but we also, this is now in a way a global village where people can live and work from their computers, and they can live anywhere. And choosing to live in a low-cost area with low crime, where you can raise your children, they can ride their bikes. There's so much to rural Kansas that's phenomenal. And, you know, younger people are generally thinking more outside the box, not just labor workers, but maybe more tech savvy.
Well, Michelle, what is it that you do?
I'm a writer, and I am a city councilman.
Interesting. So you're writing. Are your clients sort of in far-flung locations, as you've just described, working from your computer, that kind of thing?
I write about life on our farm and more observations from our community, from our area. I'm originally from New York City, and I moved out here about 13 years ago.
What prompted that decision?
I actually left New York. I was tired of the very large anonymity, and I liked the idea of living in a smaller area. And I moved around a little bit and found Syracuse through a friend, and I fell in love with it. It's community. There's things about friendship, about people taking care of each other that is missing in some ways in large cities. And I think Kansas can capitalize on that because there's, you know, it's just such a welcoming area. And there's so much opportunity simply based on imagination and creativity. If you want it, you can build it.
Michelle, as you've listened to the rest of the show, are there any of the more problematic aspects that we've discussed? Have those things affected you in any way? I mean, do you ever... do you worry about your school district? Do you all these kinds of things?
Not really. Like I said, our school population has grown. We're actually in the process next week of voting on a school bond to increase, to build a new track, new gym, new agriculture building to help with vocational opportunities.
Okay, well, you know what, Michelle, it sounds like that gymnastics class is getting pretty intense, so I'm going to let you get back to that.
Let me just ask a question, Michelle, though. Are you worried about water? Because I guess that the dairy probably draws from the Ogallala Aquifer that is a finite resource out there.
I cannot lie that we are not worried about water. I don't know anyone in Kansas who's not. It is a factor. Obviously, we're dry land agriculture. We don't rely on irrigation, and we haven't had rain. We're in a multi-year drought. It's part of, you know, it's happened before, and it will probably happen again. It is an issue, but I don't know.
It sounds like you're taking some solace in an idea that this is a cyclical climate issue, but is that what experts are seeing, I guess?
I'm hesitant to follow experts, the people who live in the area who've seen it in the 30s, who've seen it in the 50s, you know, who've seen this throughout the years. And there's faith and hope, but I'm more of the opinion that it is cyclical.
Well, thanks so much, Michelle.
Sure.
If you are from rural Kansas there now or maybe have left and would like to tell us whether you'd ever consider going back, give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM, streaming live at kcur.org. I'm here with KCUR's own Frank Morris, as well as KU's Donna Ginther. She's an economics professor and as well as the head of a business and economic analysis center. So we just heard from a woman who moved from New York to rural Kansas. Anything in her comments that really jumped out at either of you? I'll start with you, Donna. Frank, what about you?
Well, I mean, you do hear people say exactly those kinds of things. Look, if you're looking for, you know, a place where you just let your kids out and they can ride their bike all over town and they know everybody in town. And another thing is, you know, these towns are mash everybody together. All the whole social hierarchy is right there. And so there isn't really a social hierarchy in the same way that there is, you know, in sort of economically segregated neighborhoods and school districts where your kids are more likely to know a bunch of other kids and more or less the same situation that they're in. So, I mean, there are all kinds of advantages. It's just, you know, most people, you know, if you don't have some kind of retirement income or some kind of trust fund or something, it's hard to make a living out there. That's the issue.
One of the things that I recall from Brownback's roadmap for Kansas a few years back was that he was hoping to build tourism, and the Flint Hills seems a logical place for that. Do you see potential for Flint Hills tourism to turn this story around at all?
You've been talking about Flint Hills tourism for a long time, and Chase County is one of the counties that has declined every single census for the last 100 years. And that's the middle of the Flint, beautiful part of the Flint Hills. And similarly with Greensburg, you know, they have this the eco-tourism. They have a trickle of people that come in to see the buildings that have been built and to sort of congratulate the town. It's just a trickle. It doesn't, you know, there are a couple of hotels there, mainly full of people working on the high voltage lines, you know, that are going to be gone in, you know, as soon as the high voltage line is put in to connect the wind farms to the power grid in the east. But, yeah, the tourism is, you know, there's always a little bit of it, but it doesn't seem to be a big factor. You just can't get people that interested in big balls of twine and, you know, big wells in the case of Greensburg and other things like that.
Michelle mentioned that when you mentioned water being an issue going forward, she also mentioned the 20s and 30s and that we had a dust bowl here before. But given all of that, given the harsh climate and the sometimes very arid conditions, and it doesn't look like that's getting a lot better, why do we have towns here in the first place?
Oh, well, because of the railroads. You know, like Greensburg was put in along, you know, the railroads need a town every 10 miles for water. And so Greensburg, they dug their big well, which is their tourist attraction, to draw water out of the, I believe it's the Ogallala Aquifer, and supply the railroad. So yeah, these towns are lined up, a lot of them on railroad lines. So that's the original purpose for a lot of these towns.
What else? I mean, the water issue looms large.
Huge. It's huge, especially in southwest Kansas, which is, you know, kind of in a way a booming area because of all the wind power. You know, they're getting a lot. There's always been a big gas field down there. And they're getting more oil out of the ground, you know, with the sort of this vertical fracking and stuff. Not as much as they expected, but you know, and you got the feedlots, you got the dairies, and you got a whole bunch of corn, you know, which is a big cash crop, all dependent on a finite source of water that is rapidly, rapidly depleting, especially with the drought. You have to irrigate a lot more when there's a drought. So that is a game changer out in western Kansas when the Ogallala Aquifer can't produce enough water to sustain a corn crop or an ethanol plant or a dairy or a slaughterhouse.
You grew up in Kansas, and I wonder, like, how early in your own life did you start seeing signs that something might be taking a turn that wasn't looking optimistic?
Well, you know, so my Uncle Skinny had his farm out in Tribune, and he'd drive out there and get a wheat crop every couple of years, dryland wheat farming. And so we used to drive out there, and it was kind of depressing as a kid. And this is, you know, like 45 years ago, I kind of started to notice, this is kind of bleak. And then, yeah, when I was in fifth grade, I had an assignment to fill out a map of Kansas and with all the counties and county seats. And it got so depressing to me because I knew that all these little towns out there and these little counties were just, you know, I don't know. I couldn't finish the assignment. I actually told my fifth grade teacher, I just can't do this. And I wasn't like a neurotic kid or anything. It was pretty obvious back then that something was not good. The trend was not good.
We've got another caller with roots in central Kansas. Good morning, Don.
Good morning. My husband and I recently moved to Shawnee. My husband is a lifelong born and raised resident of Hays, Kansas. I was raised in Republic County, which is on Highway 36, Cortland, in between Belleville and Mankato, and then moved to Hays and went to college there. And we just recently moved here. Our children and grandchildren bring us this direction. And, of course, it's a delight to have water, but we miss people from back west. But it was interesting, your conversations about the depleting people. Hays and Ells County is extremely healthy.
Yeah.
It's a growth area. It's got the university. It's got oil and gas. It's a diverse economic base. But it is kind of an outpost.
Why do you suppose your children and grandchildren are elsewhere? Do you see any possibility that there's anything those communities could do to lure them back from where they came?
I think there's a lot of work happening in that direction. My hometown, I belong to their little Facebook page, and it's a tiny town, Cortland, but they work all the time and have really great growth, and they're lacking houses in the Republic County area, and they're trying to convince the elderly to sell their little homes so that the young families can have them. So there is a lot of work happening. As for bringing my children this way, I've always said, and it has been at least for the past, that our greatest export in western Kansas are our children.
Oh, man. That's both hopeful
like
and bleak.
Garrison Keillor. And Hayes has a tremendous water problem. They're not on the Ogallala Aquifer. They're trying to get water from a different watershed. Big legal issues with that. I mean, the Hayes is thriving, but it's got a serious water issue.
Well, let's hear from Jenny. And Jenny's calling us from where in Kansas, Jenny?
I'm also from Cortland, Kansas, and I was just listening, and you guys were talking about job opportunities, and I actually own an internet marketing firm. I also worked for a major marketing corporation whose advantage was being out in rural areas. They competed with New York City, Los Angeles firms, and the overhead was so low being out here that they could blow them out of the water on pricing. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for telecommute-type jobs from major companies, working over the Internet, getting different jobs. You know, the lady from out in Hamilton County was a writer. There's lots of writing opportunities. So I think, you know, yes, there are job struggles, but I do believe that Internet is a huge possibility.
Well, thanks so much, Jenny. We've sadly run out of time for this conversation, but I'd like to say goodbye to our, and thank you, huge thanks to our guest this morning, KCUR's national correspondent and senior editor, Frank Morris, and also to Donna Ginther, a professor of economics at the University of Kansas, who has joined us from the studios of Kansas Public Radio. It's been really interesting. Thanks so much for your time. To listen back to today's show, go to kcur.org/centralstandard. Stay current on Central Standard News by following us on Twitter. Our handle is @KCURCST. Tune in tomorrow to meet musician Holly Golightly and learn about a new library in town, a seed library. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross with help from Christy Garten and intern Kate Baxendale. Linda Scher is our announcer. I'm Gina Kaufman, and that's it for today. Stay tuned for Up to Date coming up next.